I'd like to introduce our speaker today. Dr. Michael Matheny is the Associate Director of Vinci at the Nashville VA and Associate Professor of Biomedical Informatics at Vanderbilt University Medical Center. Michael, I'm sending you the pop-up now. Can I turn things over to you?
Yes, and thank you. Let's move this over. Can you see my screen?
Not yet. You have to click show my screen. There you go. Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much, and I very much appreciate the opportunity in the cyber seminar setting to talk a little bit about some of the data transformations and some of the considerations for acute inpatient stays in the VA. So I'll go ahead and get started. I'd like to sort of get a little bit of a benchmark for the audience to get a sense of, how familiar you are with these data. And so I'd like to ask a few questions, if you wouldn't mind.
So that first question is up, Dr. Matheny, and we'll give some people some time so that they can provide their answers. First question being, how much have you used the VA OMOP data resource? And we have about 70% voted, usually tops off around 80, so we'll give people a few more moments. And things have slowed down, so I'm going to go ahead and close the poll and share out the results to the audience, but I'll tell you, Dr. Matheny, that in answer to the question, how much have you used the VA OMOP data resource, 71% of your audience today say none, 5% say a little, 16% say some, 5% say a majority, and 3% say all the time. Do you have anything you want to say about that, or would you like me to just launch into the second?
No, I think that's very helpful to sort of get a sense of how familiar the audience is with OMOP. So I think it reassures me that I set up my background appropriately. You can go ahead and go to the next slide.
Okay, so that poll is up. Question being, do you or your team have a code transformation to use inpatient data in the VA written for current or prior projects? Yes or no? And answers are streaming in. About 50% of the audience has answered so far, so we'll give people a few more moments to give their answer. Things have leveled off, so I'm going to go ahead and close the poll and share out the results and read to you that 54% say yes, and 46% say no. So now we're back to your slides.
Great. Thank you so much. So that also gives me very helpful information about the audience. So I'm hoping for those of you that do use inpatient data but don't have any transformation or cleaning code, that one of the take-homes from this presentation hopefully will be a need to to do some of that programming in order to get at what you'd like to get at. But I will present my case. So,
Michael, I'm sorry to interrupt. We've had a couple people ask if you could speak up, so maybe you could move your microphone a little bit closer to your mouth.
Sure, yeah, and I appreciate that feedback. I have a headset. Is this a better volume for the audience?
It's a little bit better. I don't know if you can do any more. Let's just go with that.
So I will try to speak as loudly as I can. Is that better?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. So first I'd like to give a little bit of background on OMOP as a common data model and why it's important to have an understanding of some of the common data models that are out there. Next, I'd like to give a little bit of an overview and an anchoring on some of the work that the CDW team has been doing on extracting data from Vista into the corporate data warehouse for reuse, and then some of their recommendations for how to use the CDW data. And then I'd like to transition into how we chose to take a subset of that data and transform it with a series of logic steps and conventions into the OMOP transformation in order to make it reusable or more easily reusable for a specific set of use cases. So first, to give you a little bit of background on OMOP, There's been a rise in the last, 5 or 10 years for the use and need for common data models. And some of you may be familiar with these. There's the Sentinel and the Mini Sentinel initiatives that the FDA funded. There's the I2B2 from the CTSAs that were funded for data model extracts from claims data and electronic health records data. There's also PCORI funded a data research network called PCORNet. And so you can see over time there've been a lot of money and effort spent in trying to transform electronic health records as well as claims data into more easily digestible and computable forms. And that's because of the old adage that really sometimes it takes 80 or 90% of a project's effort to go from source data to transform the data into exactly the representation that you need for your use case. And so it also requires a great deal of knowledge about your source data system. So it's really hard the farther you get away from actually using the clinical system and understanding how the data is collected to be able to use it for secondary use projects. And so rationale for common data models for a set of group experts to come in and to gather conventions from the experts in that area and then try to do a transform that applies, successfully addresses the most use case needs for the least amount of effort. There are a number of these tools that we mentioned. Vinci did an environmental scan and looked at a number of meta-analyses looking for how widely covered the data model is for the common source data that research projects like things like medications, laboratory, barcode metadmin, administrative codes, things like that, as well as the least data fidelity loss. So anytime you transform data from one representation to another, you can lose some of the granularity or you can lose some of the data columns, data elements that travel along with that data. So you have to be aware of potential concerns when you're doing that. The other reason why OMOP was chosen as the preferred data common data model was there's an open source development community that really has a lot of data visualization, analytic, preparatory to research tools, as well as phenotyping, data quality, and there's more coming out all the time. And lastly, and so our target was really to make sure the data transformation, the content mapping, quality assurance activities could be actually leveraged into a different CDM, not just OMAP. So if OMAP were to fall out of favor, we wanted to make sure that the effort expended would be easily transferable to another data model if the community started preferring that, such as PCORNet or I2B2 or other data models. So this is sort of an overview of some of the activities going on for OMOP transformation in the VA and how we think about it from a design perspective. Because some of the data in the VA has regulatory restrictions or requirements, there are actually multiple different common data models that are aligned with each other being built. So there's the one from the CDW that Vinci is working on and some of the natural language processing tools that various informatics research groups are building are being transformed into OMOP and pushed into that too. There's another large project that was co-funded by the DOD and the VA to take in the Department of Defense data and transform that into the OMOP common data model. So, and then lastly, there was the Virac Resource Center is leading a transformation, taking the CMS and Medicaid and Medicare data and transferring it to the OMOP common data model. I've been in a situation where I've been involved, to some extent with each of these efforts. And, my native environment is the corporate data warehouse. I'm a part-time primary care physician in the VA and practice in that environment. And so I had a fairly decent degree of familiarity with the source data, but it's been amazing to me working with the DOD data experts and contractors just how little I knew and how much error I would have made in my transforms trying to do that from the source data. And then again, I've learned a tremendous amount from Virac in trying to assist them in doing the Medicare and Medicaid transforms. It's amazing the level of detail and source data knowledge you have to have in order to be able to transform these data in a reasonable manner. So I think having source experts do some conventions and some data transformations is really quite helpful to the community. So this is an overview of the data schema. I won't go into too much detail. I just want to point everyone to the Odyssey website, which is a repository for all of the data definitions, online tools, open source tools. And then there's also a VA Pulse site where all the VA-specific implementation, logic, code is available. And so just to briefly touch here, so the way that OMOP transforms its data at a meta level, and I don't have time to go through the entire pieces, but there's a control terminology or a standard data representation that each of the different domains has as its standard. So for drugs, it's RX norm. For procedures and conditions, it's SNOMED. And for measurements such as laboratory tests, it's LOINC for labs and SNOMED for some other domains. And so it's helpful to know sort of what the target domain is for each of these in terms of being able to know how to use them. So to give you an example, just one example would be for drugs, VA represents its drugs in VA product codes or VUIDs or NDC codes, and both of those have a crosswalk to RX norm, which allows transformation. And then since you might have data, like Korea has its national data transformed into OMOP, and then Australia has some of its data, so not all of the countries and not all the participating partners in OMOP actually have the same source vocabularies, but if everyone transforms into a standardized common representation, you can write your code, execute on your local system, and then execute it somewhere else and have at least a moderate degree of confidence that you're going to get some comparable answers. And there's been some really high-profile publications that have come out by George Hripsack and others recently that have highlighted the success of this type of approach. So let's dive down from the high-level view down and get into the nitty-gritty. So the topic of the rest of this the hour is going to really be focused around acute inpatient stays and how to look at that data and how to get some of that out. So it's a very common frame of analysis for observational cohort data. Really, because of its increased granularity, you have a patient that is continuously within your within the hospital generating data. You have a lot of touch points. You have a lot of laboratory, a lot of vital data. There's just you can be certain that medical care being delivered within that time frame is all captured in the sense of whatever is documentable is captured within EHR. And so it has high volume of research and operational use. There's multiple operational data cubes that use this data, IPEC and other resources. And so it's a very important frame of reference. So I just wanted to get a sense on the research side of how many VA publications are coming out per year in this area. So I did a very rudimentary PubMed search, just trying to get a sense of it by year. And as you can see in this graph, you're looking at, you know, between 10 and 30 publications a year, which only scratches the surface of use, considering, you know, all the sale metrics and operational data cube and larger analyses that are being done for business intelligence and for quality improvement as well. So, you know, there are some challenges in using this data. A lot of this stems from the underlying source representation of VISTA and CPRS and how that data are inputted into the system. Depending on which VISTA files you access and how you look at it, you can end up with getting different answers. And so when I make the statement here that there's potentially 11% by volume erroneous data in the inpatient domain, it's really a statement that, you know, depending on which lens you use to look at the data, it may have more or less error. And when I make that statement, I do it in the context of a research retrospective project wanting to look at observational data over a period of years and wanting to specifically focus on acute inpatient stays rather than long-term nursing home stays or other sort of domiciliary stays. So take that comment in that context. So there's a lot of problems, and although these problems have been mitigated over the years, meaning there's a lower rate of error in recent years than there were in distant years, you know, there's a lot of problem as data are entered in the system. Sometimes if someone was in a nursing home or in a domiciliary care in the VA and they're brought into the hospital for care, they don't stop the other record, so they leave the nursing home record active to keep the bed for them. They get brought into the acute stay, which generates another record, and then they end up with multiple records with overlapping time. There are other problems where long-term and acute care are recorded as sequential movements within a one larger record. So you might have a length of stay where if you didn't really look under the hood, you'd think it was, say, 313 days, when in reality it could even be like three different acute inpatient stays of, you know, 3 days here, 4 days there, 3 days here, along with rehab stays and nursing home stays and domiciliary stays. So I'm just trying to use that data as is without untangling of it. You could end up with a certain error rate in your retrospective analytics. And then sometimes you can actually have multiple records created for a single inpatient stay and with potentially overlapping dates. And so then you actually have an additional complication on the outpatient side where there's a lot of inpatient care that actually gets loaded into the outpatient domain. And this is a historical artifact from the fact that all the subspecialty consults really need to have their workload tracked and justified in order to be able to get their aides and maintain their clinical services. But the system doesn't have a good way of tracking that workload. So you end up with inpatient consults that get captured as outpatient visits and get workload credits through the outpatient visit sequence. So that creates some complexities in managing all of these data. So I want to go ahead and just do a brief overview of the CDW Inpatient 3.0 domain. And I first want to make some big key points. So one is, you know, CDW's primary mandate is to extract the underlying source production data from the VISTA and CPR systems and make it available to operational research users across a tremendous set of use cases. And the next thing I would say is that it's been really cool to read and look at all the work that the CDW team has done on the inpatient domain over the years. So Richard Pham, Trinity Hall, Steve Anderson have gone through multiple domain iterations, and really, really, this is one of the most complex data domains in the system, and it's critically important because it's an encounter anchor. So I would just direct you to all of their documentation and PowerPoint presentations and work, because none of this transformation to OMOP would be possible without all of the complex work that they've been doing. So I want to make sure and make that point. The other key point here really is that if you think about it, data warehousing is conceptually a little bit of a different task than trying to represent a common data model for a specific category of use cases, which is generally the case as an implementation such as OMOP, I2B2, or PCORnet. So there are different trade-offs and requirements for source data, target data representations, usability, and considerations for handling and merging massive data volumes. I'll just use one example before I move on, which was, you know, the CDW maintains everybody in a patient SID, which is essentially a unique ID that concatenates the patient identifier at an individual site with the station, and then maintains, then there's an enterprise-level maintenance of the patient ICN that sort of is meant to disambiguate that. And I'm sure many of you have wondered, well, why doesn't the CDW create a single source of truth, one record for a patient, so that you can get a date of birth, date of death, race, ethnicity, without having to go through some transform to do that. But if you think about it at an architectural level and a data management level at a database, managing 130 sites and then doing a cascading merger of records across billions of rows when sometimes those pointers change is an extremely complex data task, and one that is really not what a data warehouse is supposed to do. So I just, you know, from an IT and informatics perspective, you have to be aware of what the systems are targeting. So I felt it was important to go through that a little bit. So let's go into the content. So I don't know how many of you are familiar with ADT systems, but essentially this is called admit and discharge and transfer records. So when someone hits the hospital, there's an administrative layer where there's a clerk sort of tracking that data flow at every point in which there's a change in the system. So when someone comes in from the outside, there's someone there that tracks them, that sort of documents where they came from, and where they're going to, and who's taking care of them, what the physical location and what the medical specialty or clinical service is that is taking care of them, and all of that gets date time stamped. Complexity comes in because there are multiple places in which this can be documented and multiple files in VISTA that can store some of this data. And so it can get a little bit difficult in terms of trying to sort of merge and get to a single source of truth. So this is a slide from a presentation from CDW from Pham and Hall, which just shows that for different target domains in CDW, you actually have to pull data from multiple different FileMan file sources. And again, it's beyond scope of this presentation to go through that. You can refer to their for their documentation for that. But I just, you know, it's quite difficult to sort of get to a single source of truth. And so, so the way that CDW built the data for the corporate data warehouse was they pulled data from multiple Vista files, and I've listed them here, but I won't go into detail. But in order to support all operational and research use cases, they provided all of the versions of these tracking systems, so provisional movement, inpatient transaction, patient transfer, specialty transfer. And so they had certain recommendations for what you should use when you're wanting to know what's the admit date, what's the discharge date, what's the specialty, you know, what are the ward locations and things like that. And again, I point you to their documentation for that reference. So we, you know, so OMOP really wants you to have a specific frame. So it wants you to have a single record for an inpatient stay. Because this is retrospective and not prospective or real time, that simplifies some of the design considerations, but there can't be any overlapping records, so a patient's not supposed to be in two places at one time. And then so we made the design choice to sort of focus on inpat inpatient and the inpat patient transfer, which is one of the versions of the source of truth for this type of data, not the only one. So I wanted to give you a little bit of an overview of this data. So you've got the two primary frames of data that we use to transform to OMOP are inpatient and inpatient transfer. And so you can see here that the areas highlighted in green are how those two tables are linked together. They're linked together through a patient identifier and through an inpatient record stay. And so another way to think about this is the in the CDW, the inpatient data table is a roll-up of these individual ADT transfer sequences in an attempt to sort of describe the situation. And so there's a couple of different key domains of data. So one is, where is the patient coming from, which you can see is in the highlighted boxes in both the overall inpatient record and the patient transfer record. And then you have where are they now? So the difference between the patient transfer record and the inpatient record is the inpatient record has information about where they came from, what they were doing while they were in the hospital, and then where they went to after the end of that inpatient record. But the patient transfer record is just a state change. It's a snapshot of a change in data. And so that's why there is no sort of what's happening right now in the patient transfer record. And then where they're going to is happening in these fields, sort of where they're discharged to, where they're transferred to, you know, what type of facility movement, what type of specialty and service, what's the physical location. All these things actually give you information that's important to sort of be able to disambiguate and try to track sort of what is an acute inpatient stay. And so OMOP transformation, so when we targeted the data, there's the encounter data for the inpatient domain, and then there's all the data that hangs off of that inpatient encounter, things from ranging all the way from barcode metadmin to condition codes to procedure codes. So when you try to calculate an inpatient record with the era of the time associated with that inpatient record, you have to also take care or at least be cognizant of a huge amount of downstream data that is linked to that data. And so again, I just want to point your attention to the fact that the CMS place of service is the vocabulary that is used for OMOP and visits. I mean, this, and so it was originally a claims data vocabulary, but then they added some electronic health record derived data elements to it that are relevant. And this is what the OMOP table looks like. So I'm trying to really walk a fine line in this presentation by not going too far into the weeds, and I'm happy to sort of touch base with groups afterwards by email or phone and talk about things in more detail. So you'll see this presentation sort of try to take a fine line approach to that. So, you know, there are some standard fields above, and then there are some custom fields below The standard fields are the ones that every instance of OMOP is required to have. And then the bottom ones were custom ones that the VA OMOP added in order to have providence of the data, to be able to track it back to the source, and to be able to execute change management of data over time. So this is a breakdown of the fields in the table. So essentially, you've got a pointer to the person. You've got a pointer to the provider of the inpatient stay or the outpatient stay. You've got a pointer to the location of care, and then you've got a date time stamp from when the stay started and ended. And you also have a pointer to a concept that tells you like whether or not this encounter is an acute inpatient stay or a nursing home stay or an ED stay, those sorts of things. So this is an excerpt of the types of data. So if you're for using OMOP, you'd essentially just focus in on acute inpatient stay or inpatient hospital, and all these other categories you would be filtering out of your queries. And so there are some conceptual challenges in trying to transform the data from the source system and the CDW into the OMOP Common Data Model. And really the biggest one is, you know, accurately separating acute inpatient stays from long-term care, because of some of the issues that I mentioned to you earlier about how things were strung together serially or duplicated. And then we have to worry about how to handle attached downstream data such as administrative codes and laboratory tests. So I'm going to take you through a pseudo-logic for how we thought about doing this transformation. And we, in order to prepare to do this, we talked to multiple COINS and multiple research groups, and we looked at some of the observational group sort of conventions and recommendations to try to get at this. And I think that, you know, this is focusing on a certain category of use cases, so I would love to get feedback from different groups, you know, about how close or far this sort of logic transformation is to the way that you like to use and manage the inpatient data. And so you'll hear me talk a little bit more about that. But be thinking about how this is the same or different than what you're used to, because we'd love to have a ongoing dialogue about this. So first, we take all of the data in the inpatient and the patient transfer domain. We remove the exact duplicates of records. Then we remove records where the patient SID is not matching between the primary parent inpatient table and the patient transfer table, which happens to a very small amount of patients. Then we generate two rows of data from each inpatient record. So if you think back to what I was mentioning before, within the parent inpatient record, you have a sense of where the patient came from before they came in the hospital, where they are while they were in the hospital, and then where they went to after they left the hospital. So those actually have to be broken down into two state changes. They have to be broken down into the state change of from outside the hospital to inside the hospital, and then a state change from at the end of the hospital stay, you change state from being in the hospital to outside the hospital. So you can essentially normalize an inpatient record and split it into two rows of data, and then you add that into all of the transfer records, which are additional state changes, and then you start merging that data. So there's a lot of determinations that needed to be done, and a lot of mappings and harmonizations. So first, there are a number of ways to determine where someone was based on a certain set of characteristics. So one, if you want to know what type of care they were being given, which is referred to as sort of movement type. So you can either have like intermediate care, you can have ASIH, which is acute inpatient hospital, ward, which is acute, usually hospital, but not always. You have determination of what service they're being transferred to and from, whether that's a medicine service or a nursing home service. And then you have a large set of Boolean rules that you have to develop in order to collapse synonymous types of services and movement types and determine whether or not that movement type is likely to be acute or long-term stay. So all of those rules are available in VA Pulse and from the code to the community. So then we sequence all of the data for each of the patient SID based on the date time stamp of that state change. We merge all of the sequences that have the same place of service type, and then merge all of the subtypes that are deemed to be synonymous, merge all long-term care, such as nursing home types together, and then merge domiciliary types together. So you end up with increasing segments of time as these multiple stays that are actually the same type of stay from an OMOP perspective get merged together. Then the last stage is the most computationally complex. You analyze all the overlapping records that are date time stamp overlapping, and you attempt to disambiguate those time segments. So you essentially look for acute and non-acute segments. Then you can break them apart into inner records and outer records if you're able to determine the acute segments. For acute overlapping segments, if they're both acute and they're overlapping in time, you just merge them. And if they're both non-acute in time and overlapping, you merge them. So again, there's a level of granularity issue here. So, it might be that someone is domiciliary and then transferred to a nursing home. Since those are both non-acute for the purposes of this transformation, they would be merged as a non-acute setting. So for source data, there's 13.6 million records as of 10/1/99 in CDW, and after all of those transformation steps, there are 15 million and 21,000 rows in the data. This does include both acute stay and long-term nursing home care. To give you a sense of the magnitude of change, of all those records, the ones in which the admit and discharge date timestamps were unchanged from the original inpatient record were only about 25%, but that overstates the case. If you look at the date stamps, in other words, if you ignore the fact that maybe the record changed by 4 seconds when the actual patient movement record said it was 4 seconds different than the parent record, and you just look at the dates, then the amount of unchanged records is much, much higher. It's 12 million out of 15 million. So some of the key issues here are that there are a lot of source records that had to be merged. So there are about 800,000 records that had to be merged. Some of them were just two records merged to one, some were 3-to-1, some were 4-to-1. Then there were also a fair degree of records that had to be split, and those were examples like you had a nursing home visit and then they were admitted to the hospital for acute and then they were sent back out to the nursing home and all of that was one record. There were about 811,000 of those records that were split. All the administrative and other data that are attached to that encounter, such as administrative codes, we made the design decision to retain the original source date stamp of the CDW record in order to maintain source data fidelity. So, and that way it also allows you to determine which one you want. Do you want the date time stamp of the ICD-10 code, or do you want to link that ICD-10 code to the inpatient stay that it's associated with and use the discharge date of that stay? You can do either with the data representation in that format. And then when the resulting encounter is not a one-to-one mapping with the associated data, meaning that you have a ICD-10 code or you have a procedure code, and it could actually map to multiple different encounters because of the constitution, then the associated administrative data is left without a visit pointer because it's not deterministically, you can't determine it 100%. So there's a couple summary points. So inpatient data from the source really are not usable for most cases without significant cleaning, and CDW gives recommendations for how they recommend that you clean it. And for certain use cases, IPEC has a way that it does its cleaning, and then OMOP has its cleaning version. So I would recommend that you sort of look at these multiple versions to decide what works best for your use case. So we've done initial quality assurance efforts, but we welcome additional validation and collaboration, and I'll, on my next slide, I'll get into that into more detail. And I would just say that this is a very complex logic. It's over 4,000 lines of SQL code. You could represent this in Python or R or C# or whatever you wanted to, but it takes a lot of execution logic in order to synthesize this down. And so, having to sort of redo this for every research project, seems and then have to represent the intermediate data products, you know, for every research project is pretty substantial effort. So in the big picture thing summary, so we've usually, if you're using OMOP and you want to use the inpatient data in OMOP, usually 1 to 3 database joins for most applications can get you to a fairly clean representation of the inpatient data where you can start adding on your covariates for use in an inpatient frame. Again, as I mentioned before, it's a lot of processing to get all this data sort of represented for acute inpatient stay use case. And so processed and then the processed data usable for research projects allows you to free up space in your research database for other intermediate table products that you need for your use case. It's reproducible. So, you know, IPEC has its standard version, and so you use IPEC and you get that standard version. And so OMOP is the same way. It's reproducible within the context of OMOP if you choose to use that transformation logic. It's transparent. VA Pulse has all the documentation and details about the logic, and the SQL code itself are available to users, so you can see the conventions and the concatenations and potential things that are, you know, with or against your potential use case. So I do want to emphasize the limitation here, which is that it's an enforced convention. So based on existing documentation and expert consultation, we transform the data using one of the possible paths that the source data allows, but there are different ground truths for different use cases, so it may not be applicable to your use case. We hope that it's, and so the last big point is consensus building. So we're trying to make this usable for the majority of research use cases. So we want field feedback. We want criticism of the transform. We want to know when it's not working well for your use case or if there are errors or gaps so that we can make an attempt to try to maximize the transform for the widest possible set of use cases for the research users. And lastly, I just really want to acknowledge a number of folks. So I want to acknowledge Scott. Vinci has been supporting this work for a number of years. There's also been PCORI funding and DOD funding and NIH funding to help some of this move forward. There's been a lot of people. Christine Lynch has been leading the quality assurance efforts. A number of developers have been working on the ETL and documentation and quality assurance, and we have a help desk that is available for anyone to ask questions for why something was done or how to do it that Liz Hantrow leads. So it's been a very large team effort, and very much appreciate all the work that everyone's done on this. And so I purposely left some time for questions. So I'm happy to transition over to that point.
Thank you, Dr. Mazzani. At this time, we don't have any pending questions, which is strange for a Vinci Cyber Seminar, so I anticipate some will be coming in. Audience members, in order to ask us a question, ask Dr. Mazzani a question, please use the questions pane in the GoToWebinar dashboard. As I explained at the beginning of the session, that white control panel that came up when you first joined the session. We did get one person just now saying thank you for making this phenomenal resource available to VA researchers. Not a question.
Very, very welcome. We hope that it gets use and that we can, you know, continue to improve it for everyone. I'm not seeing any questions in my chat panes. Is it not visible to me?
It's not. Apparently, okay. GoToWebinar decides that it's too distracting for the presenters. One person's writing in asking, can you use OMOP to compute bed days of care? And then parentheses, they write BDOC. I guess that's bed days of care.
So for the acute inpatient stays, it is a computed admit and discharge date timestamp down to the second using the patient transfer record version of the truth. So you can, compute, bed days of care. So if you're looking for per ward, if you need to know how many days they're in the ICU versus how many days they're in floor 3 versus how many days they're in the step down, this version of OMOP does not have that, although they've just issued an update to the data model that has both the visit occurrence and a visit detail, which is actually intended on tracking every change state in the process. And so future versions of the Transform will include, you know, hey, they spent a day and a half on floor 3 north and then 2 days in the med ICU and then a day and a half in this, and which will allow a pretty granular computation of time for various locations.
Thank you. Another person is asking, what is the name of the pulse page?
Let me see if I can find that real quick. Liz, if you're on, post that as a question. So Liz is our help desk person, and let's see if I can get to it real quick. Should have had that in my slide. I apologize to the group. Can everyone still see my slide? I mean, my desktop?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
All right, so that is the link.
Okay, let's see. It's a little small on my screen. I can't quite read it.
So can I post it in the chat window?
You can, yes. And then I can send it to... I can put it in the answer to the question.
Yeah. So
we do have another question that came in.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. You mentioned the SQL code used to create OMOP tables is available. Where?
Yeah. So it's available on request. So just ask Vinci at va.gov, and we'll send you the code. The reason why we don't have it on the Pulse is because there's a large amount of code at the beginning and the end of each script that is. It has nothing to do with the transformation logic. It has to do with handling all of the change elements. So when you have a given data that changes in Vista that then changes in CDW that then we have to account for, sometimes that results in one correction. Sometimes that cascades into 10 and 20 corrections depending on what the data element has changed. And so that requires a certain amount of code bloat, essentially, that doesn't have anything to do with the logic. We've had it on our plate to sort of cut out that and just provide just the transformation logic in Pulse, and we've never been able to get the bandwidth necessary to do that. So right now we're just offering the code with all of that stuff at the beginning and the end on request. So just send us an email, and Liz can package it up and send it to you.
Thank you. What would be the approach for determining whether people received mental health care, parentheses, and what kind, during their inpatient stay?
That's a good question. So you would, you would go to the visit occurrence table, and then you would filter on the acute inpatient hospital stay. I think it's like 92. You go to the concept table and search for the domain that is visit type. And then that gives you all the visit types. You pick out the inpatient hospital one from that. Then you join on that. That gives you all of the acute inpatient stays in OMOP. And then you would separately go to your administrative codes, depending on your definition code list. And you would find probably what I would do is I would find all the administrative codes that are inpatient type, and you'd have to decide if you just wanted the primary diagnosis code or where you wanted primary or secondary, and then you could pull all of those codes for those patients, which would give you the date time stamps and the links back to the visit encounter or the inpatient stay, and so you could get your cohort that way.
Thank you. Let me see if there's another question that came in. I can't. No, there are no pending questions at this time. Perhaps if you have something that you wanted to go into with a little bit more detail, or if you have some closing comments, now we could do that until other people have questions.
So I guess I would actually No, I mean, I don't have any additional comments. I would just encourage everyone to sort of ask questions and and use the help service. And it's fairly easy to get access to the OMAP resource if you don't already have it. It's just an extra checkbox in Dart. So you can basically, it's a one-liner addition to your IRB. We are going to be using OMAP as one of the data sources. It's a one checkbox addition to Dart, and then the views get provisioned into your research database. And basically, you sit those alongside of the CDW, so you use them both together.
Great, thank you. For people who wanted the answer regarding the VA Pulse page, I did send it to everybody through the chat. Through the questions, but I can read off. It's your normal, VA Pulse path, which is https://vinci-omop-users-group. So it's Vinci Omop Users Group. Should be able to find it if you do a search in VA Pulse. Dr. Matheny, thank you for preparing and presenting the session today. As always, we appreciate all the answers that Vinci people give. And with that, I'll say thanks to the audience members. And if you would, please fill out the survey, the short survey that comes up when I close the session momentarily. Again, Michael, thank you very much, and have a good day.
Yeah, I want to thank everyone for your time today. Thanks.